The yoga system is described as the process of controlling the mind. A doubt may arise here. What is this peculiar thing that we call control of the mind? And what do we gain by that? Because our problems are not apparently in our minds, they are outside in the world. We have economic problems, social problems, political problems, family problems. While all these terrifying features are there in the world outside, what is the point in ignoring these realities of life and closing one's eyes in a room and thinking something under the notion that the mind is being controlled and everything will be all right? How can everything be all right by merely controlling the mind? This is an occasional doubt that can arise even in an advanced seeker, a well-equipped yoga student. What is the connection between your thinking process and the realities of the world outside? If there is no connection, the yoga process is useless. It is a waste of time. Because no one thinks for a moment that the troubles of life are inside the mind. If that is the case, then we can keep quiet and worrying about ourselves privately in our rooms and not concern ourselves with the world outside. But the entire problem is outside. Our fears are from the external world. We don't fear anything from inside us. The fears come from outside. Somebody may attack us. Somebody may rob us of our property. Something that we need may not come from the world. Something unwanted may pounce upon us, and so on and so forth. Then what is this yoga chitta vritti nirodha? A great principle that Sage Patanjali lays down. The crucial question is this: what is the connection between thought and reality? And as far as we are concerned, reality is the whole universe, the world outside. And if yoga is a discipline of the mental processes, and if yoga is the ultimate duty that one may be called upon to do, there must be some secret relevance of this internal process called yoga to the vast reality of the external cosmos. Yesterday, we were trying to discover the indications that there is some such connection between us and the world. We were trying to observe that the vast stretches of the cosmos, with all their intricacies and internal complicated structure, the variety of grandeur and magnificence, all this vast universe outside is subtly connected with all that we are made of in our own personalities. This is what we were discussing about yesterday. Whatever be the extent of the world or the largeness of creation, this mystifying universe before us has its roots in ourselves. The strings of the cosmos appear to be operated from within. and a proper adjustment of the various constituents of one's personality would be tantamount to establishing a harmony with everything in the world, in all creation. Inasmuch as we are intimately related to the remotest parts of the world, and there is nothing anywhere with which we are not related, it would be therefore a part of our wisdom to find everything in our own selves, discover the secrets of nature in within our own bodies, as it were. This is a master stroke of the yoga genius. Ordinarily and usually, man is prone to run about in search of the secrets of nature, as scientists generally do. They have long telescopes and powerful microscopes through which they want to probe into the mysteries of nature by observing things through the eyes, etc. That means to say, there is a feeling in the mind of man that the secrets of nature are outside, and to discover these secrets we require externalized instruments such as microscope, telescope, etc. There is not the least idea in anyone that these secrets are hidden in our own selves. This is a discovery of yoga psychology. You can silently be seated in an apparently isolated corner of the world and yet be connected with everything in creation without moving about in motor cars or flying in planes, etc. To be connected with things of the world, you need not fly in planes. You can be seated even in a bathroom in your house and you are connected with everything in the world. This is a great secret which no one knows. And this secret is the secret of yoga. Otherwise, what is the point in merely restraining the processes of the mind, the vrittis as they are called? Why are you bothered about these vrittis of the mind? Let them do whatever they like, as if these are your problems. Your problems are hunger and thirst, poverty, backwardness, illiteracy, tension, warfare, and what not. If these are your problems, where comes the need for having to do anything with your mental processes? So there is a necessity to reverse entirely the attitude we have towards things in general. We have to bring about what may be called a Copernican revolution. Copernicus discovered that the Earth moves around the Sun instead of the old idea that the Sun is moving around the Earth. The tables were turned completely. And this sort of revolution, Copernican, you may call it, is brought about by yoga. We were under the notion that all the troubles come from people outside, from the world external to us. Just as once upon a time we thought, perhaps, many thought, that the Sun is moving around the Earth. Now the revolution has taken place. We find out that the Sun is not moving around the Earth is moving around the Sun. This you are not able to understand. Because you are on the Earth and you are moving in the Earth. So you cannot know that there is a motion at all. Likewise, you cannot know that the problems are inside you. Because you are moving with the problems. Even as you are moving with the earth on which you are seated. There are no such thing as problems. They are not things by themselves. It is not a material substance that you call a problem. You cannot see it with your eyes. It is a state of affairs, we may say, brought about by a misjudgment of things in our minds and a maladjustment of values, a disharmonious arrangement of ourselves with things external. These are the problems, the difficulties, the pains, the sorrows of life. The yoga therefore tries to go to the root of the matter, to dig the very base of the disease within us. And the problems of life are not going to be solved as long as we do not go deep into the problems. We discover the ultimate cause thereof, not merely the immediate cause. And the ultimate cause discovered by yoga is a peculiar maladjustment of the subject with the object, the drashta with the drishya, to put it in Sanskrit, the seer with the seen. I, as the seer, the observer, the subject, find it difficult to adjust myself suitably with what I see outside, the drishya, the object world, including everything, every person. I cannot properly adjust myself with people around me, with the things outside me, with the whole world external to me. What is my problem? What is my difficulty? This question you may put to your own self. Am I not able to adjust myself with people outside? I speak so nicely to people. I take tea with people with great joy, with a smiling face, and I have a friendly attitude towards all things. What is wrong with me? And how do you say that I am the source of my own problems? This question takes us further deep into what we are made of. That in your apparent external life of the waking consciousness, you appear to be in harmony with others, is not the truth of the matter. We are seated here, a group of people in this room, and apparently there is no conflict among ourselves. No one can imagine that one is in conflict with the other in this small group seated in this room. But there is a conflict. If you go deep into the matter, everyone is in a state of tension, even now, at this very moment, which has been suppressed by the effort of a conscious activity on the surface mind that is taking place just now, which is what you are listening from me, etc. Your apparent conscious activity at present represses the major part of your personality and makes it appear that everything is well adjusted with the environment. What you have adjusted with the environment at present is merely a fraction of your conscious mind. And yoga psychology endeavors to study the whole personality of man, not merely the conscious mind, much worse, a fraction of it. What is maladjusted with the world outside is not merely the conscious mind of yours, but the total personality of yours. The whole personality of yours is out of order. It is not in a state of balance. And this has to be set right, which is the purpose of yoga. Now this aim cannot be achieved merely by scratching the surface of the mind, which is mostly what we do, even in the efforts at very good deeds and virtuous acts of ours in life. Most of our valuable and praiseworthy deeds of life are only surface acts of a conscious level, which level cannot be regarded as even a major part of what we are. The larger portion of our personality is hidden beneath the operation of the conscious level with which we are engaged mostly. You cannot know your own self, I cannot know my own self, no one can know one's own self because we mistake knowing with mistake knowing for merely a conscious activity of the mind. The knowledge process is identified with what we call the conscious activity of the mind. When I am aware of an object, I am under the impression wrongly that my entire personality is tuned to that object in this act of knowing. But what is tuned is merely a part of the mind, the conscious mind, working through the sense organs. And you may ask me, why is it that only a part of the mind is working always and not the whole mind? Because the mind is a very shrewd politician, as it were, which knows how to work its ways. It will not bring out its deeper motives always, lest they should be defeated. You know very well that you cannot go on shouting your motives in the streets. But because you know that if you expose all your deep-seated feelings and motives, intentions, etc., you cannot live in this world of human society. So, even in the conscious level, there are many voluntary repressive activities going on. Consciously also, we repress many of our feelings and motives. There may be certain things which you may not like to tell me, even now, of which you are quite aware. And what to talk of the other layers of which you are not aware at all. The mind, when it is conscious of an object or deals with a particular object, takes out from its resources only those aspects and features of its structure which are necessary for the fulfillment of a chosen purpose at that given moment of time. What is my present purpose? And I will take out only that much as is necessary for this particular purpose. Just as you may have a large godown with lots of things there, and you will not be taking out everything every day from that godown. You will take out only 1/2 kilo of pulse or 1 kilo of rice, etc., because that is what is needed for the day's purpose. There may be many other things in the godown we are not worried about, because there is no purpose in looking at those things. The purpose being something else. Likewise, the mind in being conscious of an object and dealing with that object lays emphasis only on the specific character of the particular purpose or aim in view at that given moment of time. And everything else is shoved into the limbo. It is not bothered about other things that are there, because they are not necessary. And this is what we are doing every day, rather every hour, every moment of time. Our whole personality will not come outside, because it should not come outside for its own welfare. This the mind knows very well. But this is the main illness of man. a peculiar reservoir of maladjustments are is inside, and that is covered over with a camouflage of apparent adjustment and harmony outside. So while we are deep-seatedly disharmonious with everything, openly and overtly we appear to be harmonious with all things. And therefore, there seems to be a sort of satisfaction and a success in outward life, while there is an inward dissatisfaction and disharmony inside. And life being very short, we may die in this very condition, with a tremendous potentiality for disharmony within us, and without having achieved anything substantial in life. This latency for disharmony that is within us pursues us even after death. This is the cause of rebirth. We are reborn into embodiment in successive lives because we carry with us, in spite of shedding the physical body, the potentiality of which we are made, the psychological stuff which we really are, and rebirth, the transmigratory process, cannot be put an end to as long as the deep-rooted, the deep-seated potentialities are not brought to the conscious level and made a part of our conscious nature. So yoga psychology works to some extent, though not entirely, along the lines of modern psychoanalysis. Whatever is inside should be brought out. Otherwise, you cannot be free from tension. But no one would like to bring out everything that is inside for various reasons. And therefore, no one can be psychologically healthy in a perfect manner. Then what is the solution? Like psychoanalysis, yoga prescribes various methods of sublimating these deeper impulses, not repressing them or suppressing them, not even substituting something else for them, sublimating them by a very slow growing process. And this done, what happens is that the stuff out of which we are made, the personality of ours that we are speaking of, gets decentralized, as it were, into its components and gets adjusted with the pattern of facts outside in the world. That is what we mean by harmony with the nature. The affirmation of the ego is the centralizing principle within us, on account of which particles of matter are brought into a particular form or shape by a centripetal action and hardened into a instrument of action. That instrument being called this body. Like the nucleus of an atom, the proton or the neutron, whatever you may call it, which by its central electric action pulls the electrons around it towards itself and compels them to move around itself in a particular pattern so that the pattern of these electrons moving around it looks like an atom. So also, this proton called the ego within us, this centralizing principle, draws sustenance from the constituents of nature outside, pulls particles of matter from the five elements towards itself, arranges them in a particular pattern into what is called this body. And this process will continue endlessly as long as this centralizing principle, the ego, continues to exist. So the purpose of yoga is to break this fortress of ego, asmita, as it is called in Sanskrit. The ego is a very subtle principle which is the ruling power of what we call the psychological process within us. It is the king, the emperor, the chief directive force. And asmita, which we translate as the ego, is not merely the vanity or the vainglorious attitude that we put forth in public life. It is only a cruder form of it. Asmita or ego in the sense of yoga psychology is a subtle feeling of I-ness or I-am-ness, as you may call it. The very sensation or feeling I am is called the ego. That I am an officer, I am an emperor, I am a king, I am a Julius Caesar, this is a cruder form of it. But yoga is concerned with even the subtlest aspect of it. The mere feeling, I am. This I am-ness, the sense of individual beingness, is called ego. That is asmita in yoga psychology. Asmi in Sanskrit means I am. And asmita means I am-ness. How subtle it is. This is the cause, ultimately, of isolating us from all creation outside and making it falsely appear that we are disconnected from things outside and that all the problems and difficulties are in the outside world and not in us. This asmita is the cause of the problems. Ahankara vashad apat ahankara duradhayah, says the Yoga Vasishtha, the great sage speaks to Rama. O all your apath, all your calamity or catastrophe in this life is due to this asmita, this feeling of I am. Because I am, others also are, it follows. Well, now the trouble has started. You have set the fire ablaze. If you are, others also must be. And therefore the need arises to establish a connection with others. This is society. This is samsara. Because you are, others must be. It follows. And if others are, it also follows that you have a connection with them in some way. And you cannot understand this connection with others because the connection is internal rather than external. And the internal connection cannot be known because the asmita, the ego, works only through the senses which can act only externally. So all our idea of relationship or connection is external, spatio-temporal, causally related, and nothing of the internal relations is known to us. But relations are really internal. And the external relationship is only a temporary shape or form taken by this internal set of relations. To solve the problems of life, therefore, we have to deal with the internal relations and not merely the outer aspects of these. Thus, coming to the point with which we started, the need for the control of the mind or chitta vritti nirodha arises because of our entire personality being involved with everything in the world. And because of this ego principle within us, being the seed form of all the future projected activities, including all thought processes, etc. Whatever we think and feel, whatever we propose to do in the form of our daily activities, whatever aspirations are, whatever we were in the past and shall be in the future and are in the present, everything is in this ego, in a miniature form. And therefore, the old saying once again comes to our memory, know thyself. When you know yourself, you have known everything. Because the entire past, present and future is hidden inside you. Even the unimaginable past and the remotest future possibilities, all these are potentially present in ourselves. So to know one's own self is, in other words, to become omniscient. To know one's own self is to know the whole creation and to know one's own real difficulties is to know everyone's difficulties. Thus comes about the need for controlling the mind and as we have already observed, this psychological process of controlling ourselves, harmonizing ourselves through the yoga techniques is not merely a so-called internal activity of ours, because though for the purpose of expressing ourselves, for the sake of convenience in language, we may talk of yoga as an internal process, it is really a cosmic process. Because this so-called internality of ours, this apparent individuality of ours, is really connected with all things everywhere. So to touch anything anywhere is to touch everything. The world outside and we within are only ways of expression. There is neither a within nor a without. And so, while we speak of the subject in relation to an object outside, we are speaking in the language of the ego. Otherwise, there is no subject and there is no object. In the language of our own usual day-to-day customs, manners, etc. To think a thought is to think an object simultaneously, and to think an object is at once to imply all the relations of this object with everything anywhere. So you can imagine the importance of a thought. It immediately stirs up powers and forces which are everywhere in the world. So while rightly directed thoughts can bring about immediate miraculous success, wrongly directed thoughts can bring about a reverse consequence. We can create a hell or a heaven at once with the power of our thinking. This capacity, this potentiality, this power, this latency hidden within an individual is discovered by the psychology of yoga. And this has to be unfolded, brought to the surface of consciousness and made a reality of day-to-day experience. Hari Om Tat Sat.